All right, we're back here on AD in the Morning, and two very special guests, both friends of the program, been on before. Mika Mosbacher, she is, of course, a strategist, campaign strategist for President Trump, along with being a correspondent for all pretty much all the major TV networks. And then we've got, of course, Toni McComey, District 71 representative. She's no stranger around here. She's been talking to us at least once a week here since everything started with the COVID-19. Ladies, how are you today?
Great. Feeling optimistic.
I like that.
I'm spicy today, Aaron.
You're feeling spicy today? Well, it is Friday, so that'll work out pretty good, I guess.
Yep, absolutely.
Feeling spicy today. Well, this should be fun then. So I wanted to talk to you both and kind of get a viewpoint, one from the state side, from Toni, and then maybe from a federal, more national side, and kind of how you guys see things shaping up here with COVID-19 as we're coming out of this. States are reopening, and now we're moving right into election season. Now, Mika, I'm not sure if you knew this, but Toni is actually the Republican caucus, is it chairwoman of the campaign this year for the state of Illinois?
For the House Republican Organization, yes.
Right. So you're doing a little bit of campaign stuff, too, because, I mean, and it's like nobody's really been paying attention to any of the campaign or the election stuff as much because we've had all this other stuff to talk about. But we're getting closer now. It's starting to dominate the news more. With the virus moving in, it seemed like everything kind of got divided down party lines, whereas your Democrats were wanting to stay in your house forever, that kind of thing, and where we had the Republican side was more like, well, let's try to open this up and see what happens. How do you guys think this has affected, we'll start Mika, how do you think this has affected the landscape moving forward for the election nationally?
I think it's actually helped President Trump because it became very clear at a certain point that there definitely was a divide in parties and division among, obviously, Republican governors versus Democratic governors. In my state of Texas, for example, and we do tend to be an engine for the economy, for the national economy, especially in oil and gas, where we were getting just absolutely devastated with this coronavirus. Governor Abbott began to put Texans back to work pretty quickly. We are in phase three. We do have gyms and bars and restaurants open now at 75%. And I think that what we recognized here and what practical Republican governors recognized was the fact that we needed to balance those individual civil liberties and the right to work and mental health against risk of going back to work with coronavirus. And in our state, you're not required to wear masks, for example. Other states, you are. So that's become kind of a cultural war as well. Some see it as a symbol of rebellion against some of these overly restrictive policies, such as in Michigan. But we have hosted through Team Trump every single night a virtual event with a different senior leader in the campaign, and we've continued to raise money. And I look at money, not polling. And between Trump victory and the RNC, we raised a whopping $262.5 million during our last reporting period in April. So I think that also with this fabulous jobs report that we had, remember the pessimists among the economists, you know, thought that we would lose another 8.5 million jobs, and obviously we gained 2.5 million jobs. So I think the economy, as President Trump said, will begin to take off like a rocket ship rather than that arc that we thought originally would happen. So I think that we're back on track. Unemployment, obviously, before this coronavirus hit, was at an all-time low, both among African-Americans and women. Obviously, there's an uptick because African-Americans have been hit disproportionately with this virus. But President Trump is in Dallas. He is meeting with faith leaders, small business owners, and members of the police force at a church in Dallas to discuss how to take decisive action to deal with both the economy that's been ravaged by coronavirus and also the police and the need for reform.
All right. Well, you were talking a little bit about the more restrictive states, and we have lived in one of those here in Illinois. And Toni Macomi knows all about it. She's been fighting tooth and nail. She was fighting along with some of her other Republican representatives to get our state parks opened up, which she did. The group did anyway. And so I would say we're on a more restrictive side. Toni, how do you see that playing out for us in the state with this being an election year? Do the Democrats take a little bit of a hit?
You know, I think it's hard to say. I don't know if Mika agrees. I don't really understand how this became political, but then I guess everything becomes political.
It's the American way.
When they can find a way to take advantage of a terrible situation and try to benefit from it. And that's an unfortunate scenario and never a good thing for taxpayers and constituents, especially when you're in rural areas. I think it might, in some cases, limit people to come out just because there are still folks out there that are, one, maybe not paying attention to the difference of what WHO, CDC, the Illinois Public Department of Health, our locals are saying. So there's, you know, that feeling. There's a lot of, you know, the fear-mongering still happening. A lot of differences of opinion. So rather than risk it, they, you know, put more caution to it. So unfortunately, I think that might play into it. But that just means we have to be a little more creative and be better at it, at our creativity than the Democrats in Illinois. And when you're talking about raising dollars during this period of time, it's been hard in Illinois. For us. So, Mika, any way you want to give us advice on how to raise $265 million for the House Republican organization we are in?
Yeah, I mean, she's got this figured out.
Got it figured out. We're just kind of starting on that a little bit, but, you know, a lot of people always think, they're always like, well, Republicans, you know, they always have the money, and I'm like, not in Illinois. Never have. You know, the majority has always been the Democrats, and it's extremely important. We need to take four seats. We could change the complete total environment if we took 16 seats. But you know as well as I do to get your name ID out there. You know, a lot of that is TV and radio and digital, and that at all costs. And you know, the price goes up campaign season, and especially during a presidential election. So. A lot of, I think, Democrats in Illinois are hoping that Trump loses his mind, so they think they won't have to work as hard to, you know, win their elections. But I think folks overall, Republicans and Democrats, independents, their businesses are still shut down. They're still being told they can't go out. They're still not receiving since March 20th unemployment check money. They've had to live on, you know, the stimulus $1,200 or $2,400, whatever their family has. And that's going to be remembered. November is not that far, and people are going to remember that. And I think they will remember that at the polls. It's just getting them there, which is always, you know, always a concern.
Yeah, well, we live in a state where we have people with yard signs that say Pritzker sucks. Mika, I don't know that you've been up here to see any of that, but what is the mindset on the state of Illinois and our governor currently from a national viewpoint? Because I feel like we're a laughing stock in Illinois.
Overly restrictive, and I believe your violence in Chicago continues to escalate, and it looks like that it's in complete disarray. And then also your budget, which represents issues with many Democratic states, they had not properly prepared for a potential pandemic or any other problem. And so it looks like they're trying to rob Peter to pay Paul and then trying to rely on the Congress to bail them out for other bad policies that have nothing to do with coronavirus.
Well,
Toni can probably comment more on that.
Oh, we got plenty of bad policies. In fact, Toni and I were discussing the budget here in Illinois, and that even with the $5 billion that states are allotted through the COVID-19 aid program to borrow, we're still not going to get there, are we, Toni?
No, we're still about $1 billion short, and that's not even repaying, you know, the $6 billion that we refinanced for the backlog under Rauner. We still have another $7 billion of backlog right now. And, you know, with our bond rating, you know, we're not getting a good rate either. So that costs taxpayers, you know, much more. And it's going to be, you know, our grandchildren, well, not mine, but Aaron's grandchildren that are going to have to be paying the bills if they stick around. And, you know, as well as I do, it's, you know, the more people that are here to help pay the bills is beneficial for all. But, you know, you keep passing bad policy year after year, decade after decade. It's hard to get young people to stay here. It really is. And we are very close. You know, I live, literally, I can see the Mississippi River. I can see Iowa right from my house. And it's very easy for people to go there. And people are living in Illinois, but they're shopping there just out of spite. I mean, they're upset. People are upset.
Absolutely. Well, today Iowa basically takes off all restrictions. They're going to be 100% capacity on bars and restaurants. That's happening today. And I feel like we're still in the dark ages over here in Illinois. You know, the disparity, and I don't know if there's a lot of these where it's just such a stark difference or contrast with all of it. But, you know, why wouldn't you go to Iowa from Illinois if you live this close?
No, go ahead, Mika. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, isn't there a mass exodus almost out of New York? I keep reading that so many residents are leaving, for example, and they've just begun phase one. So when you look at the healthy states in this country and quality of life and fewer restrictions against your civil liberties, why wouldn't people just move out of, say, a Michigan or an Illinois, for example?
I don't know, because if I didn't have five kids and land and, you know, all the stuff that we got going on here, we'd already be gone.
Right. Well, and that's a big reason, you know, because we do have so many, you know, farmers and, you know, several generations, and it's hard just to pick up your, you know, head of cattle and your your hogs and your acres and move. It's not that easy for a lot of people here that are still really driving the economy, but that's getting even hard too. You know, people think, you know, farmers are rich, farmers are getting all these breaks. Well, when you're selling an entire hog for $25, and that's a good day today, that's not good.
No, there's the topic I wanted to bring up. Mika, do you see, and I know that there's been some money rolled out from the USDA already, do you have any news or do you know anything about a potential, because there's obviously another aid package passed through the House, but it's never going to pass through the Senate, nor, in my opinion, probably should it, not at that size. But are we going to see any more aid for farmers with commodities still in the tank and no real... I know that China talked about they're going to start buying some more beans and prices bumped up on beans a little bit. Do we see any other relief in sight in the near future?
I know it's been under discussion among the Republican leadership. The problem is, as we said before, I call it the do-nothing Democrats. You know, they won't work with Republicans, and they tend to be so wide apart. That all the bills seem to fall apart. They make a deal in conference, and then it falls apart again. And this is really what is helping this frustration, this anger, this desperation among certain small businesses who have not been able to survive. Many of them haven't, unfortunately. But this is also driving this enthusiasm factor with Trump. And as he now has kicked off again his first return back to fundraising as well as to campaigning since the coronavirus pandemic was announced, and he's headed to Tulsa and other places, they are doing aggressive ad buys in states like Iowa, for example, and Ohio, where we carried the election with wide margins. He's trying to reach out to those frustrated independents, for example, and others who are, and farmers, for example, or mom and pop businesses, the heart and soul of this country, to try to appeal to them, you know, with his great American comeback and his optimistic message. And where's Sleepy Joe? He emerged out of his basement to go to Philadelphia for a roundtable on how to safely reopen the economy. And I thought, well, isn't this too little too late? What are his policies? I mean, we look at his record as a politician all these decades, and it's all about higher taxes, which will obviously hurt business in Philadelphia and beyond, Illinois, Chicago, et cetera. Additionally, this crazy, radical defund the police movement is just insane. I mean, who do you call if you need to call 9/11? So we've got some lack of leadership, I think, in the Democratic Party. It'll be interesting to see who he nominates as VP. I know Kamala Harris is on the short list, but, you know, what is going to be her handling of police violence? And I did want to say one thing, since George Floyd is a fellow Houstonian, I have police officers in my family. Obviously, Trump is the law and order president. He does not and will not tolerate looting and those fringe extremist groups that tried to capitalize on George Floyd's murder, which I talked with a New York City police detective who's a good friend of mine, and I've talked to others, and they've all acknowledged that police reform is needed, that what happened to George Floyd was wrong. One of my police detective friends said that Chauvin, who killed him, is a criminal with a badge. So police reform is something that President Trump is willing to take decisive action on. I know that there are constructive conversations going on. Of course, again, they're getting hijacked politically by the, far left wing of the Democratic Party. And Biden's got to try to rein that in. I don't know how he can straddle the line between the Bernie socialists, for example, and the more moderate Democrats.
That's a good question. There's a lot of chaos, for sure, in the Democratic Party right now, and I'm not sure. I really have a feeling, you know, I saw that 21 states are reporting higher numbers of the virus since they've opened back up, and some of that, I mean, I kind of assumed that was going to happen, you know. But also, they're doing a lot more testing, which I think even if we were still locked down, if they were doing more testing, you'd still see numbers go up just because they're doing more testing. But if the numbers do go back up, I actually feel like that will not help the Democratic side in any elections, just because they're the ones that kept saying you have to stay in your house, you know, forever. It just got crazy. Some of the things you started hearing were just crazy. And people don't want to hear that. They don't want to deal with it, and they definitely don't want to live like that. And what we've been told in the media over and over and over, which keeps changing over and over and over, a lot of it's just hooey. You know, what we're seeing in real life is completely the opposite, and that's, I think COVID-19 is going to play a big part in this election one way or the other.
Oh, no doubt, especially, as I said, individuals that are frustrated and want to have a choice. If you're immune compromised, you need to be able to work from home. So there needs to be, provisions made for individuals where it's not safe to return to the workplace. But kids need to get back in school. I mean, some of these states were talking
Amen.
About not having school until 2021. How can parents go back to work, for example? And it's not healthy for kids to not be in school. So I know Texas is trying to come up with a plan to safely social distance, but also allow kids to return back to school and families to get back to some kind of normal. Because we could have a second wave, but I do think that Americans do not want to run on fear. I think that if you listen to some of the fake news media and their daily body counts and the gloom and doom, and as you said, the surge in numbers, which have to do with testing and a whole lot of other things, and maybe just hot spots in areas that are more densely populated, Texas, big state, for example. But if you look at it, what was the latest? We'll have another 100,000 deaths before, September. I think people have just become desensitized to it. We need to live our lives, earn a living.
Absolutely. Tony, you think if Governor Pritzker tries to, and I know we're running long on time here, you think if Governor Pritzker tries to keep kids out of school in the fall, which I know that there's been some initial discussions or plans or whatever, I got to tell you, any state that tries to keep kids out of school, I think turns red in a hurry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that a lot of, and I'm sure a lot of states have the same situation that Illinois does. I'm not sure. I would assume it's, I shouldn't say that, but I feel it's probably under Democrat control. We have an Illinois pandemic plan that is not being followed, that would be looking at Illinois individually through our counties or Illinois through our county public health departments. And this full state shutdown would not have happened, this full nation shutdown. You know, I think when it first happened, like we've talked about several times, Aaron, the reaction was right. But we learned very quickly about the virus and the things that we can do to protect ourselves and protect the people around us. I think for to not go to school, I think absolutely it's going to turn the suburbs that we're concerned about, I don't think we would be concerned about any longer, for sure, because you have to prove the public health risk, and you can't. And that's why businesses all across the state, and that's why counties, and that's why people are disregarding the governor's orders, because every time he pushes it and tries to send a cease and desist letter, they hire an attorney, they can go to the attorney and say, what's the public health risk? They can't prove it, and then they get to open. You're going to see that more and more and more, and people will, you know, or if there is a surge and he tries to shut the state down again, it'll never happen, ever happen. And I don't think we're going to see one. I mean, you're looking at right now, we're 28 days. Meek, I don't know if you knew that or not compared to the 14 days like everybody else in the entire world, but we're 28 days. We're right now, if we were to open the state on June 15th, that's 18 days after the start of phase three, 23 days after the start of Memorial Day weekend, which a lot of people disregarded, any sort of rules, 21 days after actual Memorial Day and the death of the murder of George Floyd, where hundreds and thousands have, come together in groups. And there has been no surge. And as a matter of fact, I looked again today, and the numbers have fallen again in the last 4 days. So there's no science to prove it at this point. So absolutely, you continue to shut us down without showing us the science, because the science that you're providing the public on the Illinois Public Health website is going against what you're saying. People, you're going to see an uprising like you've never seen.
I agree. We've talked about the contradictions. I'm sorry, Mika, go ahead.
I was going to say, and that's only going to help the Republicans, is this backlash without having absolute proof that there's a reason to keep this country shut down.
I agree.
Yeah, Mika, and don't you agree? I mean, lots of times when the Republicans are in the minority, you know, the thing that we have that we really try to concentrate on, to be strategic, is to make sure that what we're saying is accurate. Because to develop policy or to say something out loud, you know, we might not have the money, we might have the numbers, but by gosh, we're gonna be accurate. And if this was truly a public health issue, and he could prove it, we would stand with the governor, even if he was, even as a Democrat. But he's not doing that. We can't help him carry the water when he can't prove. You know, he can't show us the proof. Because show it, and we're more than willing to jump on the bandwagon. But until then, we just can't.
I agree. Well, it's going to be an interesting campaign, the election season for sure. I'm sorry, Mika. Go ahead.
Well, yes, and summer is always the most important time leading up to a campaign. And I can't wait for the debates with Sleepy Joe and President Trump. I think they will be highly entertaining and show a very stark contrast between the two. And even if you don't agree with tweets or some of the president's tone. I hear that some from women primarily. I think that the stark contrast in their approach to governing this country and the fact that, you know, President Trump promises made, promises kept, and what has Sleepy Joe done in all of his decades of service. I just really think I was astounded yesterday because I heard Mitt Romney, who, as you know, has been basically anti-Trump, stating that he thought Trump would win by a landslide, and I thought that was huge.
Right. I think all the people in the media, you got to always remember about the silent majority, and I think that caught a lot of people off guard the first go-around this last election when President Trump was elected. So I tell you what, I would love to have you both back on together as this thing's heating up, as we get a little closer to the election in November, maybe later this summer or early fall, and kind of discuss where we're at that point, both with the state of Illinois and nationally, if you guys are game.
I would love to.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Mika Mosbacher, joining us today. She is a strategist, campaign strategist for President Trump and one of those inner circle folks. And, of course, Tony McCombie, our District 71 representative here in Illinois. Thanks so much, ladies, for your time today.
Thank you, Aaron.